Welcome back to the Fan Morning Show. Elish Forfard, Katie Bunkus, Blake Murphy.
Once again, podcast listeners who don't get to hear the actual song, tweet at Elish. Guess what song she's trying to do.
That could be a good game.
Yeah.
I forgot. I always forget that they don't get it. Like, just buy the rights, guys.
I never do because it makes me laugh every single time
Rogers
thinking about
rich?
It. Isn't Rogers pretty rich?
How much does it cost to buy 10 seconds of a song? Jeff Merrick, host of the Jeff Merrick Show and co-host of the 32 Thoughts, the podcast. We were just talking wrestling. Were you listening?
No, I'm just getting up here in lovely Palm Springs.
Oh.
Yeah. 27 degrees.
Wow.
So we're going to go for a run here.
Hang up the phone, Vic.
You know what? Honestly, now knowing that at least we woke you up early, you know, you're in Palm Springs. Like, you're in California?
No, Florida.
Okay.
Do you not know where Palm Springs is?
Palm Beach. Palm Beach.
I was confused. I was like, I didn't know there was a Palm Springs in Florida, but no, because I thought the Board of Governors meeting was there. I was like, what, you just did a separate little
jump?
Yeah,
he went on his own little trip.
Jeff's like, oh, whoopsies. Oh, I thought I was supposed to go to Florida.
I got on the wrong flight.
I went to Palm Springs.
Boys,
I went and played golf.
Up?
Yeah,
here's
the thing. Palm Springs, California, the only reason you go there is you're a celebrity from like when television was first invented and you're retiring.
Also,
or you're there to go play golf.
It would be like 4 a.m. when he'd be calling us right now.
Yeah.
Which would be tough.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's why I was excited. I was like, well, you know what? At least that, you know, like at least you got your day ruined because you had to come on the show for doing that to us.
It's good, man. It's, you know, the only ice is in the drinks. It's it's nice. Yeah, it's nice.
So you're at the Board of Governors meeting. And
correct.
The biggest question coming out of that is like, what is going on with the Olympics? Are the NHL players actually going to go? What's happening? Give us the rundown of what you know.
Okay, so... Well, what we do know is they have until January 10th to officially make a decision whether they're going to opt out or not. Just so your listeners have some context for this, this is completely player-driven. Mm. Like, the NHL does not want any part of this. The owners don't want to shut their league down. Like, I don't even think that Donald Fehr liked the deal. Like, I'm pretty sure he doesn't like the arrangement, doesn't like the deal. Too much risk being assumed by the players. But the players have always said they want to go. But now with, you know, rising COVID numbers and, you know, we'll see what happens when, you know, the official Olympic playbook comes out here. The idea of a mandatory 3-week quarantine if you test positive in China and no chance to evacuate, I think has scared a lot of players. Like, I think there are still some that are like, you know, screw it. I've worked my whole life for
Canadians.
Not the Stanley Cup, but a chance to go to the Olympics, and I'm going to go. Where I think others are looking at this and saying, you know, the idea of a 3-week quarantine in Beijing doesn't really sound that attractive to me. Maybe we need to rethink this one. So I think that's, I mean, where the Players Association is trying to canvass for opinion and try to figure out where the players are at on this one, because this one's driven by the players, man. This is completely fueled by them. When they did the last round of negotiations with the CBA, this was promised to the players, and Gary Bettman, NHL commissioner, says that he is going to honor that promise. But it's a major discussion point.
Mm-hmm. So that 3-week quarantine, that's not anything different than if I traveled to China. Like, they haven't put any different restrictions in for the Olympics, or would that still be? There's nothing different about being an Olympian going to China.
If you look at the athlete's handbook, that's what it says right now.
Mm.
Like, and I know that's what freaked everybody out, Elish. They all went, whoa, hold on a second.
Yeah,
so I think some of them might have been under the impression that if you test positive, that you're immediately evacuated and you go home.
Mm.
It doesn't appear at this point that that's the case, and that has a couple of players spooked. Well, more than a couple of players spooked, actually.
I have always criticized Canada basketball, the men's team, because it's really hard for them to get the pros to show up on any consistent level. And I've always said that they need to figure out a way to be like the Canadian men's hockey team, where if they put, you know, the Olympics on the moon, they'd be like, oh, I guess astronaut training. Here's my guess. Every single Canadian goes. Like, nobody's going to not go. Like, that's just, like, I cannot see a scenario here where if you get the call for Team Canada, you don't go because of the quarantine. Like, I just, Maybe some guys are nervous about it. Maybe it's not comfortable, but I don't buy this for even 1 cent that they go to Connor McDavid or Sidney Crosby and they're like, you can play in the Olympics. You know, we might have the three, and they're like, okay, who cares? So what? Nathan McKinnon, like, no, those guys are going. Like, they're going. If they're allowed to go, they're going.
I can't say with 100% certainty because I don't know. But, I mean, we've already seen one player opt out, and that's Robin Leonard of the Vegas Golden Knights. Mm-hmm. I don't think that there's any reason to believe that there won't be more, whether they do so publicly or, you know, tell their own federation, like, hey, you know what?
I hope it's also Matthews. I hope he's like, I don't want it.
And Jack Campbell. Just bring no good American players.
I need somebody in the city. If you're listening to this right now and you know Austin Matthews, you got to start talking about Omicron variant like all the time around him. Like, hey, Omicron. Like, you got to just drill that really. Like, my biggest fear is Austin Matthews scoring a huge goal against Team Canada and knocking them out of the Olympics and then just having to come back and try to settle back into watching Maple Leafs games every day. Like, it's just not possible. I don't know. I cannot have it. That is the one thing I cannot have. I know it could happen, Jeff. Like, I think about it randomly all the time.
Hey, it could. Think about it. I mean, you think of the perfect storm for the Maple Leafs, right? And everything that can go wrong will go wrong. Mm-hmm. Can you see a scenario where there's like a... I don't know. Mitch Marner tries to make a really cute play and leaves a horrible
Jeff,
drop.
Jeff, I swear to God.
Picked up by Austin Matthews and he goes out the ice and scores.
That's not great. What if it's a shootout for the gold medal and the Leafs? Team Canada's trying to score on Jack Campbell. He makes an incredible save. Austin Matthews goes down and wins it on whoever is in net for Canada. That's
you guys are
the worst.
Just, you know, making horrible fan nightmare fuel for me. Like, you're like, let's make it even better. Blake, you want to weigh in on nightmare fuel?
Well, I was just going to ask Merrick if we could propose a new rule, and that's if the state that you are from can't pay for their arena, you're ineligible for the
like
Olympic
that.
Team.
So no Phil Kessel for Team USA, no Jacob Chychrun for Team Canada, then you're proposing on this one?
And no Matthews, because the Arizona connection there, we're gonna get him out of there, too.
If you're from that state, okay. So
well,
like,
either way, however we want to frame this so that no one is available for the American team.
That's gonna be a huge one here today. Like, it's gonna be like the VOG goes between 2 and 5 Eastern today, and you know, then there'll be a media conference afterwards. That's going to come up, and like, we still don't know where the Arizona Coyotes are going to play next season. Like, the city of Glendale has said, like, that's it at the end of this year. And then this story comes out from Katie Strang at the Athletic yesterday, you know, threatening to lock the team out of their arena if they don't get full payment by December the 20th, something to the tune of $1.3 million, which is sort of, you know, shrugged off by the team, just saying, oh, it was a human error. We'll take care of that, of course, right away. But we still don't know where the squad is going to play. Like, I know there's, you know, a lot of talk about construction of a new rink in Tempe, but, you know, that's not going to happen for next season. And, you know, Gary Bettman has always been consistent and said, like, no, they'll play in Arizona next year. They'll play in Arizona. And we're all wondering where. Like, until there's a plan that we hear about, until there's a plan that they make public, you're still going to get stories about the team being sold, the team moving, because nobody knows where the squad is playing next year. And that's a huge one all of a sudden here at the BOG.
Do they have a GoFundMe for that team yet? Like, people just chipping in? Like,
we're going to finally find out if a, you know, tree falls in a forest question, right? Nobody's there to hear it. Like, who cares? The Arizona guy is like, where are they going to play? Like, the rest of the world's like, I don't know. You guys figure that out. We'll be doing whatever. Like, we don't care.
I think
I couldn't care less.
The more bizarre thing is we're headed to, like, a semi-pro situation where Phil Kessel is not going to get traded at the deadline. He's going to get sold for a lease payment.
Yeah, they got to have, like, somebody wrestle a bear at the intermission to get people in the seats. So I'm curious too if people are talking about officiating down there, man, because that's been a big story over the last couple of days, is whether it was the memo that went out to teams of, hey, don't say anything about the officials, and then continued horrific games called by officials. And it culminates in, you know, one of the league's most visible team anyways up north in the Toronto Maple Leafs having a massive controversy over officiating. Yeah, I wonder what the conversations you're having when you're in a place like this with so many hockey people.
Yeah, I think will happen, JD. I think there'll be more of a premium and more of an encouragement placed on officials using review. Like, they have the tool at their disposal. I think, and I know it does get used, and it got used the other day, but it does get used occasionally. But I think that there might be more of an accent on officials using their review technology. Like, hey, take a pause. Let's have a look here. What did we see? Okay, we're making a call on this one. Because, listen, this game, I know the officials bear the brunt of it, but I don't know if you've ever tried to officiate before. Man, it's hard. Man, the game is fast at the NHL level. It's almost to the point where it's too fast to call effectively. And whether we need to come up with some different way to officiate, whether there's a official, you know, that's off the ice making calls as well, I don't know. I don't know how we get there, but every year it's the same hue and cry. And I always kind of laugh to myself, like, well, where are the better officials? Like, these are the best officials in the world, and they have a hard time seeing some of the obvious stuff that you know, we have the luxury of seeing because we're watching from our couch, and we can rewind and we can slow down. These people have to make a call at that time, in that moment, instantly, and it has to be right. Mm. It's hard in this game. Like, personally, it's important to be officiating thing. So I've always maintained that, and now more so than ever, part of, and I don't know how you do this with Hockey Canada, but I think Hockey Canada should have a program in this country whereby all players have a chance to officiate a game at a lower minor hockey level, at least one game, just so you know what it's like. Because I don't know if you guys have ever officiated. I've done it a few times. It is hard. And everybody will sing for the same hymn book on this one. But is it a discussion here? Yeah, it's a discussion every season.
I've reffed women's high school basketball and grade 9, 10 volleyball. Pretty easy, if you ask me.
Yeah.
I didn't know, that was pretty good, I think.
JD's trying to hide high school girls' basketball players bullied him into making a call. He would make a call and he'd get a look from Jessica. Yeah. And he'd be like, sorry, Jessica.
No. I was stern but fair official. All right. You know, I called a good game.
Right down the middle.
That's right. I'm very fair. Yeah. I was official. I maintain that I'd be a better or just as good umpire as Angel Hernandez with like a week's training. So I'm the wrong guy to bring this take to about how hard it is. It's like, yeah, it's hard, but guess what? That's what the money's for. That's the job. So just do it. Just do it better.
So the NBA officiating is a big problem as well. But the thing that makes you appreciate NBA officiating a little bit more is I watch a lot of G League and college basketball.
Oh, yeah.
And then it's like, oh, yeah. So these are the best refs.
Yeah.
I don't know what the solution is. I wonder if maybe like you mentioned the speed of the game, like, I know it's hard to get younger officials because you need that amount of experience, but like, I wonder if there's like some sort of transition program for guys who like flame out in junior or something like
they
that,
do.
Where the league,
they do.
They
Blake, they aggressively recruit players that have, like, I know that Wacom likes to recruit guys that play D1 and then played some type of pro hockey.
I haven't got the invite.
Yeah. Well, you know, I can put you in touch with Stephen Wacom. You can be part of the combine. There's women officiating in the AHL this year.
You don't want to be a professional narc, Kaylin.
No, I don't want that.
Kirsten Welsh.
Too much pressure.
In the OHL.
Then I'd have JD on the air ripping on my calls.
Oh, yeah. Like, what an idiot every day.
A referee, four far.
Why is she yelling bing bong instead of blowing the whistle?
Yeah, exactly.
That's bing bong is not a whistle, Kaylin.
Oh, God. So when we're thinking about the referees and the situation that happened over the last couple games, at least, there's been some interesting calls, especially with how the whole Spezza thing shook out. What were your thoughts on the suspension? Yeah. And if you think that was a little bit more on, hey, the refs got this, let this game get out of control.
Well, the thing about the game, that one is the game didn't have a release valve. Like, it was really hot. That game got real hot, and there needs to be a moment in the game when it's like that where, you know, some of the steam just gets taken out of it, whether it's a call or whether it's a fight or whether it's something. And that game didn't provide that. And the heat just got ratcheted up and it was higher and higher and hotter and hotter. And you kind of got the feeling that someone was going to do something dumb. because no one was doing anything about it. Like, there wasn't like a big line brawl that just diffused everything. There wasn't, you know, a major call somewhere with someone getting kicked out that diffused everything. That didn't happen. So for those that, for those people that decry, you know, oh, you shouldn't manage hockey games, just call the rule book and that's the way it is. No, that was it. That was a game that needed to be managed, I think, a little bit more to take some of the temperature down. So that's one of the, that's a feather in the cap of all those who say, like, games need to be managed so people don't get hurt. But I think it was too much. Neil Pionk was on his way down. I think Jason Spezza looked at this one and said, it's a hot situation. You just took our guy out. At that point, they don't know that it's only going to be 2 to 3 weeks. Mm-hmm. For Rasmus Sandin, all he knows is this guy's hobbling off the ice. Spezza's pissed. The whole team is pissed. He says, and he looks at the situation and says, I got a chance to get in a good lick here. I'm going to take it. You know, knee to the head of a downed opponent. It's a pretty tough one. Pretty tough one to wiggle out of. I don't think the commissioner is going to, you know, do anything to knock the penalty down. Actually, he does have the power to add games. Oh, God. I don't think he ever has before. But when it goes to appeal, the commissioner can actually add a couple.
Can you imagine the outcries? Oh. It would be awful.
You know what, Brendan? You have a point here. I'm going to add a couple of games.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, it's the Breakfast Club thing. You want another one?
Yeah, you want another one? Yes, exactly. Yeah. So this will be interesting because, you know, I don't think anyone thinks that, you know, Gary Bettman's going to rule against the Department of Player Safety. And then we'll see if, you know, Spezza and the Maple Leafs have the appetite to go to a neutral arbitrator.
Don't do it. Just let sleeping dogs lie on this one. Let Spezza rest. The good thing about this is that it is a player. Like, Sheldon Keefe has said things like, I hope his track record is taken into account. And I think that it is in the court of public opinion here, right? Like, Jason Spezza, there's nothing changing in terms.
Games.
Yeah, but that's what I mean, is that he's already forgiven in the place that matters, which is how we remember him. No one's going to remember him as a dirty player. If anything, he only ingratiated himself more with Leaf fans as a kind of a bit of a martyr and someone who was sticking up for his teammates in a situation that was uncomfortable. I'm even reluctant to say this on air, but even as I'm doing all these takes about officiating and better control, I'm like, okay, yeah. I think that there's probably a case to be made for maybe they stop the game for a minute, they warm the benches, they take a second here for people to cool off, and they put out some warnings and they let everybody know, who knows, whatever. I know they missed the call, but missed calls happen. So I'm sorry when people get really upset about the knee. It's like, oh, it wasn't a penalty in the game and he got suspended. I'm like, yeah, that happens. They missed the calls. They obviously didn't see it. If they did see it, they would have called it. It's pretty simple. It's pretty straightforward. But I will say that, like, no one ever wants anything like dangerous to happen where an opponent gets knee with their head down. Like, of course not. No, I don't want anybody to get hurt, but I can't lie. I actually love when this kind of stuff happens in hockey, where it's like, oh my God, anything can happen in this game right now. Like, everybody's a loose cannon. Like, it's just, I don't know. It's just who I am. I don't mind it. I'm like, I don't want it overly legislated. I don't want it over extra officiated. I don't want calm downs. And it's like, yeah, just be a pro and don't do anything stupid, but also, like, do some little bit stupid, you know, like a little something stupid. A minor stupidity is good, you know?
Hmm. I don't disagree. Mm-hmm. I think that, I'll put it this way. Have any of you three ever heard a conversation that went like this? Man, I can't wait to watch these two teams play tonight because they really respect each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. It's a lot of mutual respect.
I can't wait to get to Scotiabank to see these teams respect each other. Anyone ever said that?
Thank God.
Ever said that?
Thank God the refs called all those penalties and slowed the game down, and then everybody went into the box. You know, that was the best part to me, was when they were like, and then they called another penalty. It's like, this is one of the fun things about officiating that we always just kind of skirt around, and it's with bad umpires, whatever, is that it's fun to bitch about the refs. Like, it's just a fun thing to do. It's like everybody's on the same team with bitching about the refs. You know, like, we're all there. You can be mad about a player, you can disagree about somebody, but everybody hates the refs, and that's awesome. Awesome. And that's why, honestly, the only thing that I would really change here is, hey, league, let the people bitch about the refs too. Like, these guys get paid money, up their salaries if you need to or whatever for the take heat clause or whatever it is. But it just bothers me that these leagues go out of their way to protect these officials. Like, hey, you can't even talk about them. You can't even put a little even hint of disagreeing with the way that they call the game. Like, just let them. It's fun. These refs want to be personalities too. They're always out there trying to make games about themselves. Like, I don't know. I think just let them be ripped, you know, let them be ripped publicly on the ice, wherever that by us, that's fine. I'm good with it.
So a couple of things there. One, to your previous point about, you know, wanting to leave some dirt in the game. You know, Ron McLean had the great quote years ago. He said, you know, we got to remember, you know, hockey is rock and roll. It's not, you know, it's not smooth jazz. Like, that's what hockey is. It needs some dirt in it. To the other point about officiating and letting teams blast off on the officials, the only point, because listen, I agree with you. Like, there needs to be some mechanism where you can say something about the calls. But the only thing that I think the league pauses on, and I know I certainly do, and I wonder what effect this has, is, you know, the NHL and all sports are very much cozying up to gambling right now. And if there's any sense that officials can't handle the game, or the officials could cost the team a game, does that throw a chill into people that are thinking about putting money down on a hockey game? Like, there's any sense that the officials have any say or sway in the outcome of a game, at least from a public perception point of view? Mm-hmm. I think the league looks at that and says, whoa, hang on a second here. There's a new golden goose called gambling, and we want to make sure that there's no even discussion about how these games are officiated and how that can affect the outcome of a game.
I just watched another documentary on point shaving in college basketball the other day. Like, it's called Bad Sport. And I was like, wow, yeah. I wonder how many of these are. And last I checked, March Madness, doing fine, just fine. I don't think people are going to be like, you know, like, I've never met anybody who was like, hey, we're going to do a bracket. And he goes, well, you know, did you ever hear about Arizona State Sun Devils point shaving? I will pass, sir. Like, no, they're just throwing the money down. Like, it's just, it is what it is. Like, it's bad officiating. I don't see it happening.
So I mentioned that one thing that makes me appreciate NBA officials just a tiny, tiny bit more is watching the G League or college basketball. One thing that makes me appreciate these officials in any of these sports a little bit more is the sport with the absolute worst officiating, which is professional wrestling. Merrick, it's that takes us. It's time for Murphy and Merrick's Random Wrestler of the Week.
Oh, okay. Let's do it. See if I can nail this one.
Yeah, I mean, this one's an easier one, but maybe there's a tricky one. So yesterday, the Lou Marsh Award was given out, and I made the argument on this show that Kenny Omega had a good case. Mm-hmm. In addition to holding a number of championships and having a number of five-star matches, he was also the 2021 PWI 500 Wrestler of the Year. Now, that the PWI has ranked the top 500 wrestlers in the world since 1991. During that time, seven Canadians have ranked in the top five. Kenny Omega is obviously one of them. I just mentioned he was number one twice. And I'll give you Chris Benoit as a second one because I don't want to be sitting here while you try to think of Chris Benoit because it's awkward. So there are five other Canadians who, since 1991, have ranked in the top five Wrestler of the Year award. Can you name them?
Ooh, okay, well, Bret Hart would be one.
Yep.
Chris Jericho would be another one.
Yep.
Wrestler of the Year.
I want to guess. Edge.
You want to guess?
Edge?
Edge is one.
Yeah, I got one!
Friend of the show.
Oh, no way. Wow.
Friend of the show, Edge has been in the top five four times.
Oh, my God.
I also have a guess.
Okay,
and it's only because of Blake's Twitter account that I'm thinking about this person at all. I'm trying to remember his name, but he wore the Canadian pants. Lance Storm.
Lance Storm did not make the top five, no.
I was so stoked that I had one.
So you got to be thinking here. This is top five. Like, this is
I thought that guy was like a guy.
So the remaining two both only have one appearance each.
Okay, this is now Merrick time.
No. So this is, I'll say they're in more recent years.
Hayla's just Googling right now.
I Googled
now.
She's it.
Like,
now I know.
I know.
Like, one, yeah, is, one is Bruce Boudreaux's favorite wrestler, if you saw some stuff on social media this week with him and Jackie Redmond.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I get that.
Oh, I missed that.
Wow.
This is a cheap one. Who is it? One, I don't know.
Kevin Owens.
Oh, I got it wrong. Again.
Oh,
I thought
yeah.
It was Brock Lesnar.
Well, Lesnar's not technically Canadian.
I know, but I thought
sometime.
Bruce Boudreaux liked Brock Lesnar.
He does, but yeah. he did a big thing with Jackie about loving Kevin Owens.
Okay.
And, so there's one left, and I don't think anyone's going to get it. But Merrick, I'll give you one more hint. He was with Impact Wrestling at the time.
He's Canadian?
Yeah.
Sing a song or something, Blake. Like, how does he, what's his thing? What's
you
intro?
Might say this particular wrestler is glorious.
Oh my God. I know that. I went to the.
You do?
Vic's got it.
No, I don't
Vic
know.
Got
I don't
it.
Know.
Jump in, Vic.
Just, no, don't tell. No, I went to NXT and they sang this guy's
oh, yes.
song.
Yes, and he had the piano entrance.
Da, da, da,
sorry,
da,
what did you
da,
say,
da,
Merrick?
Da, da.
Bobby Roode.
Yes.
Isn't it?
I would never know his name.
One of the best entrances. I was at that one too, JD.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Doesn't an NHL team play this song when someone scores?
They
I think
should.
Predators do. Yeah, it's a good song.
This is awesome.
Yeah. This is awesome.
Guys, that was like a full team effort. I'm proud of us.
What an entrance
you guys
song.
Play, you guys should play that every time JD makes a point.
Yeah.
So never?
No, every time JD makes a good
play
point.
Play that song underneath the whole show.
So
you
never
time?
Hear like, it?
That's
okay.
All right. A little music bed for me.
So
that's good.
That is the Murphy and Merrick Random Wrestlers.
I liked
of
it.
The week this time.
That was a good one, Blake.
How about CM Punk ripping on the Islanders?
Ailish played that clip in her A-list segment
that's right.
earlier.
I'm a big CM Punk
good.
Fan.
Yeah, Max Caster got a shot in at them too. So
it sounded like he was about to say, "Haven't won a game since Bob Nystrom."
Ooh.
Like someone sent me the clip, and I texted him last night. I'm like, "Hey, dude, it sounded like you were going to say Bob Nystrom." He goes, "Oh, that's better." Oh, I
next
missed
time.
It. Well, it sounded like he's warming up to say Bob Nystrom.
What I was waiting for was like a shot at Justin Bourne. There were that many Islanders jokes, and like you know, there are a lot of father son combos kicking around AEW. Mm. So I thought, you know, you're the most disappointing son in Long Island since Justin Bourne or something like that, you know? Just throw him way under the bus.
Harsh.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a tough one. Oof.
Yeah.
Oof.
Bourne was trying to get in on it on Twitter last night, too. So he's in on the joke. I wouldn't just do that to him. All right, Jeff, thank you
yes,
so much
sir.
For taking the time this morning. Enjoy the nicer weather there.
Yeah, go golfing or
enjoy
whatever
enjoy lots of
do,
talk
surfing.
About referees and boycotts and stuff like that.
Look at that. Sun's coming up. Yeah, I'm going to go for a run. Oh, look, there's the pool.
Yeah, go for a run, get a coffee. Make sure you sunscreen those sleeves because, you know, it's rule one.
I hope
one.
You forget to wear your sunscreen.
No, not with tattoos.
I do.
You can't.
Yeah, that's even
that's
worse. Good.
I do it all the time.
Yeah.
I'm sloppy that way.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Jeff Merrick.
Have to get him touched up. All right, boys.
The Jeff Merrick Show, 32 Thoughts Podcast. Have a great day. Thanks so much. That was Jeff Merrick.
Mm-hmm.
I also have something to chew on for you guys.
Wow. Before we do that.
Yeah, of course.
Can I just tease this? Because I want to give you guys time to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
What's the story in sports that you've cared the least about that's actually been around? Like, not like a one-off. Like, something that... Because everybody thinks about Deflategate, right? But the Arizona Coyotes arena thing, like... So our producer, Daniele, sends us the link to, like, Arizona may be locked out. And I see it, and I get just immediately, like... I'm mad at him for even sending it. And he's doing his job well. Like, that's him. He's doing his job well. He's like, hey, guys, here's a sports story that is in the news. Mm. And it's on ESPN. It's on there. And I'm just, all I can think of is how dare you send this to me? Like, Arizona arena stories, number one for me.
I got one we can circle back
to. Okay, good. Because I just like, it's been around my whole life, basically. I can't remember a time. When Arizona didn't have arena issues. I know peripheral stuff about it. Like, I know they want to build it near the airport, but the airport's like, no dice. And then they're like, but we need it. And then they're like, I don't know. Who cares? And then the NHL goes, we made Austin Matthews. And it's almost the worst that Austin Matthews exists because now we have to be like, all right, well, we'll deal with another 10 years of where are they going to play arena stories? Because we got to keep this stupid team in this stupid city that doesn't care. But it's the number one story for me. So sit on that. Think about it. Also, tweet it in. Leave a DM. Shoot whatever. Send a text, 590-590, at JD Bunkus, at Ailish Forfar, at Blake Murphy. You got to follow. Otherwise, we're never going to read these things. But yeah, the sports story that you have cared the least about that was around the longest? Okay.
Yeah, keep those texts.
That's something to chew on too, you know. Like that's also.
You want to just use that as something to chew on?
No, we didn't introduce it. Okay.
Because it is time for something to chew on, brought to you by Great Canadian Meats.
Yum, yum, yum.
Ailish might have something to chew on. You got something to chew on?
We just got a nice tweet from a gentleman named Anthony Frizina.
You know he's a gentleman, huh?
That said, is it weird that Bobby Roode's Glorious theme is my morning alarm?
Not at all. That was my alarm at one point.
Oh, you guys. Yeah,
I like using, it's a good way to wake up.
Glorious!
I use that.
Yeah, it's 4 in the morning.
It's a nice way to wake up. I used to use the New Day theme as a
mine
intro
is just
because it starts.
Honestly, sometimes you say like a dorky thing and I'm like, that's the dorkiest thing that anyone's ever said. And then it's like, that's the new
then
one.
He tops
like,
it.
You yeah. wake up to a nice, happy beat and it's a new day. Yes, it is. Come on.
Ennis has a good theory on this, though, where so Ennis used to have the wake up song of Here Comes the Sun. And he says now he hears it and the song is ruined for him.
Yeah, definitely.
Because he associates it with waking up. It's like,
imagine if he had the morning show, how much that would suck.
So I have just the stock alarm, right? You know, the iPhone stock alarm.
Yeah, that's what I have right now. Yeah.
Yeah. But do you remember that commercial that was on TV for a little while where they would like play it really loud and you'd get like, it was PTSD. You'd be there, you'd be like, what's happening right now? Do I have to go to work? Do I have to get out of bed? It's cold outside. Mm-hmm. And how I kind of thought it was rude of them to put that in there because it would mess up. I almost said that. Effort there.
Yeah, it's like the commercial that has the Slack notification.
I don't use Slack though. I'm not cool.
Okay, well, it's not a cool thing.
Yeah, it's kind of cool. Slack is kind of like, hey, I'm cool.
No,
I'm a writer.
Annoying.
We don't have.
I know.
That.
It's like, yeah, but you got to be a writer to be on Slack.
The worst thing that's happened.
No one has Slack. That's just a normal person in normal life.
So chewing yum yum yums.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So this is going to be more sports oriented than that stuff. We're going to talk to Michael Grange at 8 o'clock and talk a little bit more Raptors. Mm-hmm. I was on the Raptors show with William Liu on Tuesday, and someone who has guested on this show before, David Thorpe, mm-hmm. was on to talk about Scottie Barnes a little bit. And he said, as a coach, how he would be approaching Scottie Barnes' development as a three-point shooter is catch and shoot only. He thinks that letting a guy also take shots off the dribble and work on a step back and stuff like that, while fun, you know, maybe takes away from getting that catch and shoot mechanic down.
That's interesting, especially for a player development coach like that to say that. That's really like, wow.
Yes. So I thought that was interesting. And then Scottie Barnes takes a bunch of threes again last night, which they've been encouraging him to do. And it's great. So he went 2 of 7 last night, which that's fine. You're going to live with that as Scottie Barnes figures it out. But the something that you want here is that not only is that maybe a good developmental argument, but success-wise, Scottie Barnes is 3 of 9 in the corners, and that's not a lot of attempts. That's a higher percentage shot if you're in the corners, and he's 10 of 29 on catch-and-shoot attempts above the break, whereas he's 3 of 10 on pull-ups. So the percentages aren't too different there. But the something to chew on here is, should more of Scottie Barnes' attempts as he's getting used to becoming a three-point shooter be those stationary catch-and-shoot looks in the corners versus the more difficult ones he's creating for himself off the top or as a trailer in transition?
So as I'm thinking about this, I'm going, how harmful could it be considering the volume, right? Like, is his career mm-hmm. really going to change? We're talking about like an entire course of a season. How many off the dribble threes is Scottie Barnes going to shoot?
And he's taking 10.
Yeah. Okay.
But David Thorpe's point was also that like, it's also some of those like trailer threes where you take a couple steps into the shot as you catch it. And that's not the same mechanically
the same either,
as a catch and shoot. And this is not like, had this come up Monday or Tuesday on our show, I would have been like, no, let him fire away. And it's something I'm chewing on now because David Thorpe, who knows this stuff well and knows Scottie Barnes' stuff really well.
Yeah.
Was like, no, I would maybe just have him doing the catch and shoots.
Well, this is it. If this comes from someone who I don't think knows Scottie Barnes very well and is just kind of throwing that out there as an analyst who's trying to have a take on Barnes, I'm going, okay. But for context, I actually think that this is really important. David Thorpe is someone who has developed and coached and worked with like, I want to say over 200 people that have played in the NBA. He's one of the like longest running skills coaches in the history of the game. He's a protege to Masai Ujiri. He is also someone who had a kid play at Florida State during Scottie Barnes' tenure there. So he has a ton invested in watching Scottie Barnes and his development. And so if he is saying that with all the things he knows about Barnes, well, he's just ruined every time Scotty Barnes takes the dribble three for me, because I'm actually going to, like, I put a lot of weight into that person's opinion on this matter.
And I've been chewing on it since Tuesday. Maybe more grinding my teeth on it.
Wow.
Grinding this jerky into dust.
That's why you need a mouth guard.
Yeah, I was going to say, you two, it's a team mouth guard. Exactly. You guys both have your cats
don't expose
us. Mouth guards for sleeping.
All right. Well, it's stressful to spend 4 hours a day with you, JT.
Yeah, I know. You guys, so, I know. Maybe
I go
it's
home,
amazing.
My teeth are just clenched.
Speaking of, I would like to take a break from that. Yeah. We'll take some of your texts and talk Toronto Maple Leafs after the break, and then we'll get back to Raptors at 8 with Michael Grange. All that's next on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Woo! Good morning.
Good morning. It's Baby Friday. Baby Friday.
It's like, at worst, like teenage Friday for you.
Baby.
Oh, it's fully Friday. Braylish.
I was going to say, don't leave that hanging. Someone's going to be driving right now and be like, Friday.
Tomorrow I'm going to make plans, get a Christmas tree.
I was on the phone with someone yesterday. No, it was Tuesday. It was Tuesday, and they were like, oh, and it's Wednesday today, right? And I was like, yeah. And then I thought for like 2 hours it was Wednesday. I know. I was so sad.
We got a great text in from Dave Z. Oh. My alarm was that this is going to be the best day of my life song for a while.
I got to say.
Was that text a voice note?
Yeah, it was an awful song.
No, well, not only is it a bad song, that's a psychotic choice.
You're going to wake up
every day.
It's going to be the best day of my life.
Yeah, every day you're like, okay. All right, Dave. Best day of your life.
Go get him,
Dave. No pressure, Dave. Wake up. It's going to be the best day, buddy. All right?
If you have the second best day of your life,
then you failed.
It's a disappointment.
Piece of crap, Dave. No pressure.
God.
That's a tough one.
Yeah, no, I've never had this song because I'll just like end up probably putting it into my dream. You know when you're like dreaming that something's happening? Like if it was a song, I think I would just like have it playing in the background of my dream and I wouldn't wake up.
See, I just picture Dave having a bad day and he's like the one tear coming out of his eye where he's just like, this is gonna be the best day of my life. Like singing it to himself as he
And of course that's gotta get
to
stuck
cry.
In your head all day. Like
oh,
that's
yeah.
sorry to everyone
oh,
listening
yeah. Everybody's
right now.
Toast.
You're gonna be singing that song for
everybody me. Listening to this today is toast, is thinking about that. And you know what though? Maybe one of our listeners will have the best day of their life.
I hope so.
And they'll say it's serendipitous that they were listening to this.
We are giving Leaf tickets away later.
We are giving Leaf tickets away later.
Although that shouldn't qualify as the best day of your life.
You never know.
People might have had bad stuff so far. Mm. We might change their life, put it on a good course.
Okay, so speaking of extremes, I want to know the worst thing. I want to know the worst thing now. And I want to know it from people too. So text 590-590, tweet us or DM us. At Blake Murphy, at JD Bunkus, at Ailish Forfar, both on Twitter and Instagram.
Those aren't my ats, but if you can at that guy, he probably gives you some crypto stuff.
Here's the thing. They'll see.
So JD asked, what is the sports story that you just care the least about?
Yeah. What is the one? Because for me, it's Arizona. Mm-hmm. And I think for a lot of people, it was Deflategate. Because if you guys remember, like Deflategate forever and ever and ever, it was like the story. I will say, I actually didn't mind Deflategate because that little moment where there was the text exchange and they called Brady the deflator and they said that's because he lost so much weight during the off season, which was, I'll remember that till the day I die. So I love that story. But Arizona Coyotes arena issues, I cannot think of anything worse. It will always be the number one story that I just, if they told me, hey, you got to go on air tomorrow, we need you to fill in because there's a crazy thing in Arizona, I would genuinely like fake sick. I wouldn't do it. I would find a way out of it.
Just a quick one on Deflategate. I thought it was interesting because I was living right outside of Boston. Like, I was living in New England during that. So,
right.
Like, everyone was so fired up about it. Like,
can you believe they did this to Tom Brady?
It's my boy, Tom.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm like, you just need to relax. In terms of sports stories I care the least about, like, especially lately, is when Forbes does their big, like, valuation list of NHL teams. Like,
that's a great choice.
It just really bothers me. Like, annual ranking of NHL franchises, and it's like the New York Rangers are at the top. They're worth $2 billion, and then all the other original six franchises are up there too. And then the Arizona Coyotes are dead last.
Yeah.
like, it just, it doesn't interest me, but it becomes this like news narrative for the next, I don't know, week or two about where's your team rank? Like, how rich is your franchise? Nobody cares.
The only reason that I slightly care about, but I think it's a great answer, is it's just a reminder whenever we have things like salary caps or owners crying poor, they go, we had these losses this year, you know, because that's owners love doing that. They love telling you about the quote unquote losses they've had on the business.
Yes, negative cash flow while my investment grew 50%.
Exactly. And I think the report yesterday was that some of those teams grew as much as 33% in value over the course of the pandemic, which is pretty good. You know, if you had 33% on your returns over the course of a year and a half, I think you're pretty stoked right now. So, yeah, I agree, though. It's like all the articles and all the people that reference it and all the people that miss that point and are just like, oh, this team's okay, who cares? I really don't care.
And an extra special reason why I hate it is because a lot of these humongous $2 billion franchises didn't give a cent to women's hockey or any other like organizations. Like, they donate like $25,000 to helping kids get equipment. It's like, you guys have $2 billion and where are you giving back?
They donate just enough to hit the tax credit they need. Mine is, and this is, maybe this is just because I've covered the Raptors for so long. I do not care about television ratings.
So you guys are basically both in like the lists, like you're like one money and your ratings.
I don't care. And this is
why don't you care about television ratings? Though? That's so interesting because you work in media.
This is probably a wrestling fan thing as much as anything. Like, where like fans of WWE versus AEW will like argue with each other about like, oh, well, this one got higher ratings. Mm-hmm. It's like, I don't care. I don't care who else is watching it and how many people, as long as I'm enjoying it and it's healthy enough to exist.
But from the standpoint of your work, you don't find it interesting? Like, I'm fascinated by ratings. I'm always paying attention. Like, whether it's our podcast ratings, which you should leave a review. Whether it's television ratings. Whether it's I'm always wanting to know when it's something involved in the industry, how it stacks.
The kind of stuff that I don't care about is like, oh, the Warriors aren't good and the NBA is woke, so the ratings are down. Where it's like, no, that's like any sort of sample. It's just like these are the ebbs and flows of things. Mm-hmm. And I have an issue particularly with NBA ratings because there's not really any coherent attempt to capture non-traditional viewing methods. So like, I also just find like our current way of measuring ratings not particularly effective. Probably.
See, what I'm hearing now is defensive basketball guy being upset that the Raptors and NBA ratings in Canada suck.
They don't suck, though.
They do. They really suck. The out-of-market NBA in this country is like...
I don't care. Why would I care?
That's what I'm saying. I'm trying to dig in on why you hate the ratings.
I don't hate them. I thought the whole point was the thing that you care the least about.
Yeah. Oh,
the thing you hate. It's thing you care the least about.
It sounded like you hated it. That's why I was
I don't care.
I'm trying to think about...
All these things are cyclical.
Yeah. I just care so much that I'm fascinated.
But you care so much about everything.
Yeah, I do. But I care so much about ratings always because I'm like, okay, what are people watching? What are people paying attention to? And I always try to take it with the grain of salt of like, okay, well, how many people are streaming this? How many people are doing watching this in different ways?
That's what I mean. Is by like bigger? we don't capture that.
Yeah,
you know how they do like radio, listening percentage where they have that one person like in their car that has a little listening device. And
don't tell people how they get our. It's like, you know, this.
It's
us,
so
we're
strange
house,
how they get like
thing.
How they calculate that stuff.
Anyway. Yeah, that one. I'll tell you this. I don't put as much stock in that one.
Yeah. good thing we have a podcast.
Don't play that if, you know, they're good, though, because then I care about them a lot.
Yeah. Anyway, like once a month, the top NBA story on ESPN.com is about the ratings, and I just don't care.
Mm.
So we got some text answers, too. Mm-hmm. So
yes,
you hear those?
Yes, I really want the text.
Allison in Toronto. I hate the LeBron versus Jordan debate enough already.
I got to admit, it really is at the point now where when you see it, you're like, how are we still doing this?
I don't understand how we found a new entry point into this discussion. There isn't any.
Well, if LeBron wins a title, right? If it's like in the bubble when he wins one, then I understand because he's starting to stack something. But just as a day-to-day filler conversation, it's got to be one of the worst. I will say this, like it's pretty much... It does happen quite a bit. It's funny. Sometimes I'll meet people and they'll be like, oh, what do you do? And then you tell them. And then sometimes like that is the reply. They'll be like, who's GOAT? You know, like that's, it's like a classic. No, but I actually, but it's one of those things where I like, I already have my like stock quick, like I've done it so many times where I've got like my 20 second answer and then
you just pull up a voice note on your phone.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like I should be able to have a statement on it. Usually the tough one for me is when people go, here's the real thing. It's not either of them. It's Kobe. And then I'm like, oh God. All right. That's when I get sucked in. And then I end up doing like a 20 minute diatribe about it. But no, Jordan versus, that's such a great answer of like, who cares? Because it's such a like subjective time you lived in, thing you value. Like it's all, you know, I mean, the right answer is Jordan, but yeah, it's annoying.
Here's another text. I'm in the vast minority, but I couldn't care less about Golden Glove award winners.
Huh. That's a weird one.
That is a weird one.
I appreciate that one. I hope we're coming around on it. But like, if you look back at the history of Gold Glove award winners, they do not very accurately reflect who the best defenders are for very long, right? Like, it's I think hardcore baseball people would tell you that they're not a particularly accurate reflection of who the best fielders are. Like, Lourdes Gurriel got nominated for one this year.
Yeah. Or as I call them, baseball ruiners. Like, yeah, let me just enjoy the guy who makes a flashy play and then give him the meaningless award.
Ray Ordonez was like my favorite player. I didn't need to know he WRC plus like 30.
Yes. So that one, I don't really, you know what though? Now that this is, it's a weird one, but I'm like, you're right. I don't really care. It's totally one of those things where you see it next to someone's name on a baseball reference page and you go, I don't care. This isn't, it's almost like it's, you only use it as a bit of an amplifier if there's somebody that you like, you know, at the end of their career.
He's got three Gold Gloves.
Right. Like, they're trying to go in the Hall of Fame and it's such a hard, and you go, hey, and
Ray
all
Ordonez.
The Gold Gloves.
Yeah.
Oh, he's got all the Gold Gloves. But realistically, Blake, you're right. It's kind of one of those awards where it's lost a little bit of significance over time.
It's like once we had any way to measure defense and it's like, oh,
yeah,
Derek Jeter didn't make errors because he couldn't get to any balls.
Yeah. It's also baseball. Sports in general, like the older I'm getting, like the idea that it's all these different people trying to watch all these different games and get an accurate assessment of what's going on. You have to lean on numbers more, and defensive metrics I still think are pretty shady in baseball. But it's one of those things where baseball's every single day. Every day there's 162. So the idea of having someone who's actually watching guys play defense and then goes, this is the guy. It's pretty ludicrous. So weird answer, but Steve, who wrote that?
Didn't put a name.
See, no credit for you then. No credit for you, but good answer. Good answer. Good tweet.
Yeah, yeah. We got a bunch in here, but we got to take a break.
Okay. We'll read more of them throughout the show.
Yes. So many more. Keep them coming. And after this, we're going to talk to Michael Grange, Sportsnet NBA insider and columnist, about last night's game.
And if the Raptors are going to buy, sell?
Ooh.
Tank?
Tune in to find out.
When is the trade deadline?
Early February.
Oof.
I was like, why?
Is it next week?
Yeah, I was like, why that? But yeah, okay.
Well, why that? Because Grange had a big column yesterday.
Oh.
You didn't read it?
Sorry, because Grange. We have guys like,
Hurry, go read it during break.
The Pacers and the Blazers who are reportedly hitting eject buttons on things.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're going to get spicy with that tomorrow, but we're going to ask Grange where the Raptors sit with it. After this, it's next on the Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.